working this year through a bunch of tools that we hope to leave everybody with after this year that enable us to make substantive changes in our lives. And we do a lot of talking in here, and we do a lot of, I know we've imparted a lot of the fundamental teachings of science and mind. And this year, we're focusing on making actual changes to our lives, and laying the foundation by talking about the four levels of consciousness. This is part of a kit that I bought off of Amazon.com. Gail introduced it to us. It's the Life Visioning Workbook. And the package, the whole kit, includes two CDs, a bunch of cards like this that you can use for meditating, and this book here, which is short and easy to read. And the let me tell you, the CDs are really good. The book's very good. And the cards are excellent. So if you want to follow along with this, I recommend. I think it's probably under $20. And Michael Beckwith has a way of putting science of mind teachings into practical terms that I think are going to help us all a lot. So victim consciousness is not something that you maybe have once in your lifetime and never move on from that. Many of us start at that stage and don't leave it for long, and other people kind of go back and forth between the four levels of consciousness. A lot of times, victim consciousness may be a reaction to stress in your life, and what I hope to leave you with today is some ideas on how to move beyond it, if that's what you'd like. Victim consciousness has a point of view that life is done to you, and that you have no power, that you're targeted by others who have power over you. And you may end up with prayers that say things like, "Oh God, get me out of this," and and you ask God to forgive you and that sort of thing. And it's kind of the opposite of what we teach in religious science, which is that we are God, that we are peace, that we are love, that we are powerful at all times, and that we simply use our prayers to access that. People that are living a life in the victim consciousness mode are living in what we call race consciousness, or living with the collective beliefs of humanity. And what this means is that the culture, the family, the heritage that you have set your beliefs, and that you don't ever examine them, that you simply live them. And so, if you find yourself never examining your belief system, you may indeed be in that first stage of consciousness. In victim consciousness, you have a tendency to think the same thought over and over again. I think it's called obsessing. And you think a lot, but you don't think for yourself. You tend to think about the situation and what that person or event is doing to you, and yet, it causes you to live from reaction to reaction, and to avoid some of the uncomfortable things that being in an uncomfortable situation may bring. You may take up some habits like smoking or overeating or watching sports or substance abuse. But you live from the belief that I have drama, and therefore I am. Things like your spiritual practice, treatment, and prayer may be scanty or non-existent. And that's a real sign. If you're feeling that, if your prayer life, if you're not meditating much, you may be in that victim phase, because your inner resources may be getting a little slim. That's what we use prayer and meditation to kind of fill ourselves. And so the main thing that you get by overeating or substance abuse, any of these things that can help us to avoid dealing with our uncomfortable feelings, is we miss all of the growth that these opportunities bring us. So I want to talk first about how to know if you're around a victim or if you are a victim. And if I didn't know before I started preparing for this talk, I'm a lot clearer now. I can tell you that I have had more people come to my office and tell me stories, and I can now go, oh, you're thinking like a victim. I don't say it out loud to them because I found that when I do things like that, that I lose friends.
It's their drama.
I know. Right. And I will admit it brought up some situation in my life that, I realized I could go into victim mode, and so it's given me a really good chance to work all of these principles through. So, some general characteristics about victims. They're usually people that don't see that the only thing that they have in common between all those people and situations they think have been victimizing them, that only common denominator is them. And victims are usually people you can't depend on because the drama in their lives is so overwhelming. And they typically don't take responsibility for their actions, and they like to blame others and situations for the things that aren't working in their lives. One thing victims tend to not have is what we call resilience, which is the ability to bounce back quickly after a setback in life or a challenge in life. Victims are generally pretty passive. Life is done to them rather than them being powerful creators. They're often angry at people or God or events that have done them wrong. And underneath the feeling, these feelings of anger is a feeling of powerlessness. And lastly, another thing that I have found in common with the victims is this sense that something bad is about to happen, but you don't know what it is. So you walk around going, is this the bad thing? Is that the bad thing? So... the underlying cause of all of this, of course, is your beliefs. And if you get rid of the beliefs that are causing the situation or causing your attitude of powerlessness, the more your feeling of victimization is going to disappear for good. Now, before I start talking about how you can overcome this and how you can be a real winner, there are some benefits in being a victim. Otherwise, why would we do it? And here, I'll just list a few, and I've had an opportunity in preparing for this talk, and I started looking at other people. I realized that there are definite benefits, and see if you can relate to any of them. The first is you get a lot of attention. You get a lot of people going, oh, no. Oh, they're going through some really bad things. And they may act concerned. They may try to help you out, and what you get from that is a lot of love and validation. And the problem with this on a long-term basis is it gets really tiresome for the people that are around you. Another benefit is you never have to take any risks. If you don't take action, then you never have to risk anything like rejection, or you never have to go to another person and say, hey, this is how I'm feeling right now, and you never have to face that person going, you're out of your mind. Another benefit is you never have to take responsibility. It's sometimes really hard work to take responsibility for your own life and to look at your own part in creating the situations in your life. And so it can seem like a short-term win to not take responsibility and just blaming everybody else. And it also makes you feel like you're right and everybody else out there is wrong. It's kind of like having siege mentality. Mm-hmm. So if I can do all of that, then I feel like I've got some real benefits from that. However, there are some downsides. I can tell you, you never end up living life fully as an expression of God. You just feel like you're some kind of tool of somebody else, instead of feeling that incredible flow of energy when all of a sudden everything is clicking, it's making sense, and you're in what I guess they call the groove or the vortex. You never feel that. Ultimately, it makes you feel separate and isolated, like the world is against you, instead of feeling like there's only one being in the world, and that's me and everybody else. You never feel that oneness. And it can also create some stress in our physical well-being, And I experienced that last weekend. I was at a gathering with Ricardo, and I experienced a retina tear, ended up in the hospital that evening. And my blood pressure was way over the top. And it was a really good opportunity for me to see that, indeed, I probably, at one level, I was in enjoying the victimhood. And so I try not to make a big deal of it, but I could tell you that the stress of, coping with the situation I'm in right now, and obviously was creating thoughts in me that brought about some illness. And by the way, I'm recovering really well. I had some laser surgery, great doctors, and I ended up having a pretty good time in the hospital. So,
explain that.
Good time in the hospital? I brought lots to read. I brought my knitting.
I thought maybe you met somebody.
Oh, no. 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 I didn't get a single drug. No. In fact, they had those drugs that open up your pupils, and then they were shining all these bright lights because they were trying to see the back of my eye where the retina is. And
ouch.
And the doctors were all cute.
There we go.
It was a benefit, yes.
For what you could see, they looked that's pretty good. They might all look good when you're having that's good.
Yes.
We shouldn't have told you.
Okay. So I've got 6 steps for you to talk about as things you can do to break out of that cycle. The first is to be okay with not being a victim. And so you're going to have to give up those benefits I talked about. One of the things when you give something up is there's sometimes a sense of emptiness. It's like, okay, what am I going to talk about? I can't talk about my boss this week. I can't talk about my ex-husband. I can't talk about the situation in Haiti or Syria. I can't talk about any of those things. And so you're going to have to learn to talk about something else. And it may be uncomfortable for a while, but it is rewarding because I can tell you, it when you start giving up talking about your stories like that, you start feeling a tremendous relief, like a weight being lifted off your shoulders. The second step is, of course, to take responsibility for your life and to stop blaming others for things that you call bad that happened to your life. And it can be amazing, the difference, if you're only, if you just try it for one day, just say, I'm responsible for everything that's happening in my life. And we're going to talk about that in some of the other levels of consciousness. So this is a teaser for what's to come. But you start feeling better when you realize that you have choices and that you can feel good at any moment in your life. There aren't too many times in your life when you can, you can honestly say you never feel good. So that's one of the real benefits. And then there's gratitude. And we talked last fall about gratitude and writing thank you notes. And I can honestly say that doing that on a regular basis for me has been helpful. And I find that when I'm in a situation where I'm feeling like the universe is doing to me as opposed to me doing to the universe, the more I can get out there and talk to people about what I like about them or what they've done that I think is remarkable, the more I feel that sense of heaviness lifting. And so there are a couple questions if you want to kind of ease your way into gratitude. The first might be something like, does somebody else have it worse on the planet than I do? And while you may not have positive thoughts, you may be able to lift your perspective a bit and realize that there are people living under worse conditions than what you're having right now. So the goal is absolutely to get to a place where you can see all the things in your life that you have to be grateful for. Because normally, when you're focused on the victimhood, you're not seeing the larger perspective, which is that life is good. And then the next question you can ask yourself is, what is the hidden opportunity in this situation? And this is one of those questions, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute, but this is one of those questions that's a door-opening question. And you may not have an answer, but what happens is you open the door to an answer coming to you at some point. And instead of asking yourself, why is this happening to me over and over again, you can focus on making yourself feel better. Releasing blame and forgiveness. There's a wonderful quote that Catherine Ponder has about forgiveness, and I keep going back to it. When you hold someone resentment towards another person, you are bound to that person or condition by an emotional link that is stronger than steel. Forgiveness is the only way to dissolve that link and to get free. And this is so true. I mean, I think about it. When I'm going through a situation and I'm really pissed at somebody, that's all I can think about. And it's like I have them right there. Every day, every moment of the day, they're like right there in my face. And I'm thinking, now why would I want to do that? I would rather cut my ties to that person in a gentle way, of course. I don't need to do anything bad, you know, negative to them, but I don't need to allow them into my consciousness. So one of the things that is in the workbook and the cards is a set of exercises that you can do to forgive. And we've talked a lot about forgiveness in this group. I wanted to bring a couple of examples with me that I thought were really relevant. And these are people that went through things far and above anything I've ever lived with. The first is Azeem Kamisa, and he was the cover article in last month's Science of Mind magazine. His son Tariq was shot by a 14-year-old. They were both young men, and after a bit of grieving, he ended up creating a foundation to break the cycle of youth violence, because he said the real problem is that you have 14-year-olds running around with guns. And so he formed the Tariq Kamisa Foundation, and he enlisted the help of the grandfather of the young man who had shot his son, and ended up forgiving the shooter himself. And the two of them, you can't imagine what an impact this would be to go and listen to the two men talk together, the father and the grandfather, about their experiences and about the message of forgiveness. And every time I think about that, you know, it just kind of opens my heart a little bit more, because I realize that they lived through an extraordinary situation that hopefully most of us don't have to go through, and somehow they've turned it into an example for other people. So they turn that into opportunity. The other thing that I wanted to talk about a little bit, I find that when I give a talk that my talk follows me wherever I go. So yesterday I hopped a train, went to New York for the day, and saw the opera Anna Bolena. And it's about the story of Anne Boleyn, who was the second wife of Henry VIII. And in this story, of course, it starts when her husband is losing interest in her because she's unable to bear a live male heir. And he has taken up with her best friend. And he has decided that she is to be executed, and there are some trumped up charges. And of course, I'm so saturated in this topic. I'm listening to this and my heart is breaking for her, because it's just so painful to watch this beautiful woman, as the mother of what became Queen Elizabeth I, go through this. But at the end of the opera, she's forgiven Jane Seymour, who became the third wife of Henry VIII. And I thought to myself, if that was me, I would have done the woman some damage, but she she forgave her. You know, and she didn't say, you've caused all the pain in my life. You know, she was able to forgive her. And then at the death scene, it was particularly difficult in the opera the way they portrayed it. The wedding bells for Henry's wedding with Jane were ringing at the same time she was about to be executed. And she talks about the light and hope and a better world as she's about to be led to her execution. And I listen to that story and I go, I don't know if I could ever do that, but it sure is an inspiration It's amazing. Okay, back to my list of six. The next step is to give yourself a break. Going into victim consciousness may be something you do from time to time to cope with a situation. You don't have to stay there, and you don't have to beat yourself up for being there, because that, in my opinion, just wastes energy. But this may happen from time to time, particularly if you're hit with something, a challenge in life. And lastly, the thing I think is most important is to develop the art of inquiry. And I have always found that the universe loves it when you ask questions, because when you ask a question, it's always looking for ways to show you answers. And something new always emerges. And so you can always say, okay, universe, I'm in this situation right now, and I don't particularly like it, but can you show me something, you know, a new perspective? Well, I found for my own situation yesterday, as I was coming back on the train and thinking about the opera and wondering what it had to teach me, I thought I started seeing things from a much broader perspective, and I could understand a lot better. And I think that's true if we take any situation like that where we feel like life is against us. If we sit and we say, okay, universe, what is it? What am I not seeing right now? That a lot of times it'll help you hone in on the areas that there may be an opportunity. And it may be that you need to develop a new quality, or you need a quality within you that you haven't tapped upon, like empathy or patience or love or compassion, which will help yourself to develop, you know, focus on the qualities of God that we've talked about over and over again in here, and focus on that God within us, and we start to accelerate our evolution again. Now, after the break today, what we're going to do is we're going to listen to Michael Beckwith himself. I don't know about Connie, but I've been listening to these meditations over and over again, and they're amazing. And so I wanted to share that with you, and I apologize, I'm not doing a personal meditation or something, but I think it would be really helpful to all of us to listen to one of his. So we'll do that after the break. But before that, David is going to read something beautiful to uplift us after victimhood.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
When we let the love that is within us go out to the God who is in all people and the divine presence that is in all things, then we are loving God with all our heart, with all our soul and mind. Because we are recognizing that spirit within us is the same spirit that we meet in others. This is loving our neighbors as ourselves. The love that is within me goes out to the God who is within all people. I recognize the divine presence everywhere. I know that it responds to me, and I know that there is a law of good, a law of love, forever giving of itself to me. The divine and perfect law is circulating through me now. Its rhythm is in my heartbeat. Its perfection is manifest in every organ, action, function of my physical body. Love and perfect life circulate through everything. This love and this life I accept as the truth about myself, now and forever. This same love, this same presence, this same law of good, I recognize in others. It is a divine presence, a holy presence, a perfect presence. It is a law that heals and makes whole, that prospers and makes happy. This is the law of my life. This is the good that I meet everywhere. I know that only power is there. It is the only presence that is there, and it is love, the Spirit Almighty. There is no condemnation, no judgment, no fear in me. I feel that I belong to the world in which I live. I love people, and I am loved by them. I have a deeper sense of confidence and trust. I feel that I am secure in life and am no longer anxious about anything.
Mm-hmm. And that's step number 7, which is beautiful words like that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ernest. Thank you, Judy.